An Osho Talk. The great Zen master, Ta Hui, reflections on the transformation of an intellectual to enlightenment. Number 18.
Contemplating No. A monk asked Chao Chu, "Does a dog have Buddha nature or not?" Chao Chu said, "No." This one word, no, is a knife to sunder the doubting mind of birth and death. The handle of this knife is in one's own hand alone. You can't have anyone else wield it for you. To succeed, you must take hold of it yourself. You consent to take hold of it yourself only if you can abandon your life. If you cannot abandon your life, just keep to where your doubt remains unbroken for a while. Suddenly, you'll consent to abandon your life, and then you'll be done. Only then will you believe that when quiet, it's the same as when noisy. When noisy, it's the same as when quiet. When speaking, it's the same as when silent. And when silent, it's the same as when speaking. You won't have to ask anyone else. And naturally, you won't accept the confusing talk of false teachers. During your daily activities, 24 hours a day, you shouldn't hold to birth and death and the Buddha path as existent, nor should you deny them as non-existent. Just contemplate this. A monk asked Chao Chu, "Does a dog have Buddha nature or not?" Chao Chu said, "No."
There seems to be a misunderstanding on the part of Ta Hui and perhaps it is something to do with his unconscious. Because he has been speaking in a sarcastic way against Gautama Buddha. Now the pendulum has moved to the other extreme. Because the answer of Chao Chu was not no, but yes. It is possible when you are unconsciously trying to get rid of a guilt you can read things which are not there, or you can miss things which are there. Your mind is never reading what is actually the case. It is continuously interpreting according to its own prejudices. One thing is certain, that he is feeling guilty of a misbehavior. He has been disrespectful to a man who has done no harm to him. But there was a reason to be disrespectful. He was an intellectual. He was a man of mind. And all the people who are confined to their minds are bound to be offended by a man like Gautam Buddha, whose whole insistence is that mind is wrong and no mind is right. All intellectuals are bound to condemn such an attitude just to defend themselves. They don't know anything about no mind. They know only what mind is, but they have achieved honors, respectability, prestige and power through the mind. And anybody who says that mind is not a power but a bondage, that mind is not a prestige but sheer stupidity, that mind is not your honor but simply an indication that you belong to the lowest of human beings. The real power belongs to the man of no mind. Hence, intellectuals always have felt offended by the mystics. Ta Hui started his journey as an intellectual. Although he was part of a tradition that was created by Bodhidharma in China in the name of Gautam Buddha, but somewhere in his unconscious there was a revengefulness which was coming up again and again in sarcastic remarks, like the old pale face, the barbarian. To call Gautam Buddha a barbarian is such a nonsense. And when he must have realized it, what he has done, Now he wants to put things right. And he is in such a hurry to put things right that he starts misreading things. With all good intentions, remembering this, you have to understand what he is saying. A monk asks Chao Chu, does a dog have Buddha nature or not? And it is an ancient strategy. It is not only Chao who has been asked. Thousands of other masters since Gautam Buddha have been asking the same question and have been receiving the same answer. And the answer has always been yes, because Gautam Buddha himself had answered yes. The same question was asked to him, does a dog have Buddha nature or not? Because he was teaching that all beings have Buddha nature. It is very natural to ask all beings. You mean dogs and donkeys and buffaloes? Do you really mean all beings? If he was saying all human beings, then too it was questionable. What about Adolf Hitler? What about Ronald Reagan? But he is saying all living beings. Naturally the question arises, it is not only about dogs, it is simply about the lower categories of animals. And how Gautam Buddha can say no? It will contradict his whole fundamental attitude about life. It will contradict his reverence for life. Whether the life exists in the form of a dog or in the form of a Gautam Buddha, it does not matter. It is life. The form is just a constantly changing thing. The life inside, which is absolute and eternal, is exactly the same as it is in Gautam Buddha. It is according to his reverence for life. To him, except life, there is no God. So when you ask such a question as, does a dog have Buddha nature or not, without even asking Gautam Buddha, I can answer on his behalf, yes, a dog has a Buddha nature. That is the very essence of his philosophy. And this Master Chao is an enlightened master. He cannot say no. But it seems Ta Hui cannot say yes, because again that will remind him, I am doing the same thing again. I have called him pale face, I have called him the barbarian, and now I am going even worse. I am calling him equal to a dog. It is because of his past utterances that he reads nowhere there is yes. This should be a great lesson to you. You can read things which are not there. Just because you want to read, you can read. You can go on missing things which are there if you don't want to see them. Your mind is not only a receptacle, not only a vehicle to receive information. It is a continuous censorship. The scientific work on the mind is almost unbelievable that it does not allow 98% information to enter in. It prevents it outside. It allows only 2% which fits with it. 98% whether it does not hear or hears from one ear and allows it to go from another ear. If he is a man, if he is a woman, then she hears from both the ears and allows it to go from the mouth. That is the only difference, but that difference is there. It retains only 2% which fits with its expectations, with its conditionings, with its prejudices, and that's actually the case, that he reads no, which is impossible. I cannot say no. How Gautam Buddha can say no? And how Master Chao can say no? Nobody who knows life and the potential of every living being of growing someday, sometime, somewhere, finally into an ultimate luminous being, is bound to say yes. So I will read yes instead of no. Does a dog have Buddha nature or not? Chao said, yes. This one word, yes, is a knife to sunder the doubting mind of birth and death. The handle of this knife is in one's own hand alone. You can't have anyone else wield it for you. To succeed, you must take hold of it yourself. You consent to take hold of it yourself only if you can abandon your life. Many things are implied in these few sentences. This one word, yes, is a knife to sunder the doubting mind of birth and death. Without knowing, how can you believe that you were before you were born? And how can you believe that you will be after you have died? But if Gautam Buddha says, yes, a dog has a Buddha nature, that means Buddha is accepting the eternity of life. That forms go on changing, evolution is not something discovered by Charles Darwin. Evolution is an Eastern concept discovered by the mystics. And in the East, they have gone really deeper. Charles Darwin is only superficial. He is thinking that man has come from the monkeys. And he was laughed all over the world. The idea looks strange. But the mystic's idea does not look strange. He does not say that man has come from the monkeys. He says that the essence of consciousness has passed through many forms. It has passed through the forms of monkeys too. Coming up to man, according to me, every man is not coming from the monkeys. Different people have traveled different lines of evolution. But all are coming from different animals. And that is one of the reasons why they are so unequal. A man who is coming from the monkeys is bound to carry some traits, some characteristics of the monkeys. Another man coming from the horses will have different characteristics. And there are millions of animals in the world. And every person has moved through different forms. It is not a highway that the whole humanity is coming from the same source. If it was the case, all people would have been equal. Somebody is a genius, somebody is a born idiot. Certainly they are coming from different sources. Gautam Buddha himself remembers his past lives. In one life he says he was an elephant. And after the life of the elephant, he was born as a man. And the reason why the elephant was born as a man, he tells a beautiful incident. The forest in which the elephant lived suddenly got on fire. It was a summer night and a strong wind blowing, and the whole forest was on fire. The elephant, just like as other animals, started moving out of the forest. It was very difficult because the fire was all around to find a way out of it. And particularly for such a big animal like elephant. And finally he comes under a big tree which has not yet got fire. And just to take a little rest, he stands under the tree and watches all around in which direction it will be right to move to get out of the fire. And as he takes one of his foot up to move, suddenly a small rabbit just comes underneath his foot, thinking it as a shelter. Of course, the rabbit cannot see the elephant is too big. And in the dark night, every animal is so shaken and frightened, the rabbit is trembling, afraid of his life. And the elephant, if he puts his feet down, will kill the rabbit. If he does not put his feet down, then the fire is approaching closer. But the elephant finally decides to sacrifice his own life, but not to kill the rabbit. Just because of this decision, the consciousness takes a jump from the elephant form into human form. People are coming from different sources for different reasons. The theory of reincarnation is basically the more scientific approach to evolution than Charles Darwin. It is well known that different animals have different characters. If you read Aesop's fables or the ancient Panchatantra, which is the most ancient book of parables, and researchers think that the fables of Aesop are all taken from Panchatantra. And in fact, there has never been any man historically of the name Aesop. These are the stories of Panchatantra, told by Gautama Buddha, who is also called Bodhisattva. As the world moved from India, Alexander was the first to take the name of Buddha to the West. The Bodhisattva became Bodhisattva. And it is always a problem whenever a word moves from one language to another language and then another language, it goes on changing its form. It is Bodhisattva which becomes Aesop. But it has begun through at least 5-6 languages before it turns up as Aesop. Because all the stories are told by Buddha himself. All the stories are about animals. Animals talking. And each story has tremendous significance. If you look in the animal world, for example, the elephant has a memory which is far stronger than any human being. He never forgets. Just it is not in his possibilities to forget anything. It will recognize its master even after 30 years. It happened that Gautama Buddha's cousin brother, Devadatta, was very jealous. Of Gautama Buddha and his enlightenment and thousands of his disciples. He was a very intellectual man himself. And he became a disciple of Gautama Buddha in the hope that Gautama Buddha will choose him his successor. First he was Gautama Buddha's cousin brother, very close. Secondly, he was as intelligent as you can hope a person can be. Very erudite, very scholarly. But time went on. Buddha started becoming old, and Devadatta finally one night asked him that it is time you should declare the name of your successor, because you are getting old, and after your death your disciples, without a successor, will all fall apart into small segments. Buddha said, "Do you have somebody in mind?" And Devadatta was very much in difficulty. He has not thought that this is going to be the case. But he was very ambitious, so finally, although he was feeling embarrassed, he said, "Yes, I offer myself. I belong to the same family, our blood is the same, and I have grasped everything that you have said, and I can represent you. Perfectly well, and I don't think anybody else can be a competitor to me." Buddha said, "The very idea is egoistic, and I can choose only someone who has never thought about being chosen, who is so innocent that he cannot even think. Certainly you cannot be my successor. So forget all about it." But Devadatta could not accept this situation, which looked to him as a humiliation. He revolted against Buddha and took out 500 disciples with him. But that does not make much difference. Buddha had thousands of disciples. If 500 have gone with Devadatta, that does not make even a dent into the great commune that Gautama Buddha has created. And these 500 were the people who were also ambitious, who also wanted some positions, who wanted to be declared enlightened, although they were not enlightened, who were jealous of people who were being declared as enlightened. These were the people who has entered the great commune of Gautama Buddha with some egoistic ambition. They left. But Devadatta could not sit silently. He has not left just to retire to the Himalayas. he started conspiring against Gautama Buddha. He made many efforts to kill him. That's what I wanted to say to you, that he brought a mad elephant, not knowing that that elephant used to be a friend of Gautama Buddha when he was a child. It belonged to Gautama Buddha's royal palace. And it was so heartbroken when Gautama Buddha left the palace that it simply escaped to the forest. And it started behaving in a crazy way. The shock was too much. He loved the child. They were really great friends. They were always moving together in their great garden near the river. They were always found together. It was almost 40 years afterwards that Devadatta found this mad elephant in the forest. He managed to catch hold of him. He thought this is a great opportunity. To take it where Gautama Buddha meditates under a tree and leave it there. Because that elephant has killed many people. But because he was not aware that that elephant has gone mad because Gautama Buddha has left him 40 years before. So he rushed at Gautama Buddha and he would have killed, but as he recognized, all his madness disappeared. He bowed down, touched his feet with his head, sat into his feet, putting his head into his lap. 40 years of separation. Buddha opened his eyes and he could not believe that his old, he has forgotten. But it was an old friend, and Devadatta could not believe. He thought it is a miracle. He became so afraid that he stopped after that making any effort to kill Gautama Buddha. But he had no idea what has really happened. It was not a miracle, it was simply the memory of the elephant. A person who is coming from the body of an elephant into the body of a man will have a tremendous memory. And in the same way, all the animals have their own special talents. I am saying this for the first time, that every human being has come from different animals. Charles Darwin's idea is wrong, that all have come from the monkeys. Because if it was so, then all will show the same characteristics, which is not true. A dog can be born as a human being, or may go through a few other life forms, may become a lion, may become a deer, and then come into human being. But if he comes from a lion, then he will have tremendous courage. Then he will have the courage to be a rebel. But if he is coming from a sheep, he will become a Christian. Particularly Catholic. Because the sheep cannot do anything else. You cannot say that Jesus Christ was wrong when he said that I am the shepherd and you are my sheep. He must have recognized that all these guys have come from sheep. Charles Darwin's idea is right, but not in details. In details, he has not been able to work it out. I agree with him on this essential point, that man has evolved out of animals. But I don't agree with him that all human beings have evolved from the same animal, monkey or ape or chimpanzee. All human beings have come from different directions. It is a gathering of all kinds of animals. And if you watch people, you can find that from where this person is coming. Just a little watchfulness is needed, alertness. And you can feel that this man seems to be related to a certain species. Taoist saying that this one word, yes, is a knife to sunder the doubting mind of birth and death. Now you can see, no cannot do that, only yes can do it. If Chow has said no, dogs are dogs and Buddhas are Buddhas and there is no bridge between them, then dogs die as dogs. Then there is no evolution for dogs. Then elephants die as elephants. Then there is no evolution for elephants. This seems too much. Man's monopolistic ideology that only man has the capacity to evolve and nobody else. I have heard somewhere in Sweden, in a railway station, there is a statue of a dog. And it is not more than 100 years old. On that railway station, the master of the dog used to come every day to catch a train for a nearby city. And the dog will come with him and will go on looking as long as he could see the train moving far away beyond the horizon. And when the train was gone, he will return. But he will be always present exactly at the time the master used to come back in the evening. But one day, the master never returned. He had a heart attack and he died. The dog was waiting. The message has come. But how to explain to the dog? And the dog was searching the master in every compartment of the train. All the people of the railway staff were feeling really sad for the dog. They all knew him for years. It was a daily routine. He has never missed. He has always come in the right time. If the train was late, he will sit exactly where the master's compartment used to stop. They tried to chase him away, but he will come back again and again and sit there. One train passed, another train, and he will search in every compartment with tears rolling down his eyes. Seven days continuously every train was searched by the dog, every compartment, and tears were continuously coming to his eyes, and he refused to eat. And the whole staff of the railway station was immensely concerned. They could not believe that a dog can have so much love. Even human beings don't show so much love. And the dog died sitting at the same place where he used to meet his master every day for years. There they have raised, the station staff contributed the money and made a statue of the dog. And the whole story is written on the marble on which the marble statue of dog stands. It is not about one dog. There are many dogs who have proved immensely loving, trusting, who have even sacrificed their lives for their masters. to stop the gates of evolution for every being and to keep them open only for human beings is simply ugly. What is the difference between human beings and other animals, except your bodies? The form of your bodies is different, but the no-form consciousness within you is the same. If Chao has said no, then all the statements following it will not be right. They can be right only with my correction. With yes, then this one word becomes a knife to sunder the doubting mind of birth and death. The handle of this knife is in one's own hand alone. You can't have anyone else wield it for you. To succeed, you must take hold of it yourself. You consent to take hold of yourself only if you can abandon your life. If you are ready even to abandon your life, you will rise to the ultimate peak of your consciousness. That's why it is called the razor's edge, the path. It is risky. One has to risk everything to find that ultimate splendor. It cannot be found without risking everything for it. You cannot hold something. Without holding anything, if you are ready to abandon your life, you can find it this very moment. If you cannot abandon your life, just keep to where your doubt remains unbroken for a while. He is suggesting a beautiful meditation again. If you cannot abandon your life because of your doubts, who knows, you abandon your life and nothing happens, no enlightenment, then you cannot even complain. You cannot even go to the police station and report that these people are deceiving. They say, abandon your life. I abandoned my life. And no enlightenment, nothing. Once your life is gone, it is gone. You cannot complain. The risk is total. You cannot hold a little bit so that if it does not happen, you can at least inform others, don't believe such a thing. I have abandoned almost 99% of my life. Just 1% I am keeping to inform others as a warning, but that is not the way it works. Either you risk 100% or you don't risk at all. But if you doubt, then there are other ways. there is no need to feel hopeless. If you cannot abandon your life, just keep to where your doubt remains unbroken for a while. Just remain alert of your doubt. It cannot remain forever on the screen of your mind. That's the beauty of all the meditations. They finally can be reduced to watchfulness. From any direction, you can come to watchfulness. Just watch the doubt. And go on looking at it. It will not remain there forever. Even if it can remain for a few seconds, that will be a great achievement. Soon it will disperse in the smoke, leaving a silent space behind it. Suddenly you will consent to abandon your life, and as the doubt disappears, without any effort on your part. If you repress the doubt, it will remain. Don't repress, just watch, and it will disappear in the thin air. And you will be ready suddenly to abandon your life. And then you will be done. Only then will you believe that when quiet, it is the same as when noisy. When noisy, it is the same as when quiet. When speaking, it is the same as when silent. And when silent, it is the same as when speaking. Once you are ready to abandon even your life, which is our deepest longing, we can abandon money, we can abandon family, we can abandon everything. But when it comes to abandon life, that is the last thing we would like to save. The question is not actually that you have to commit suicide. Just your willingness and the miracle happens. Not that you have really to abandon it. Just your willingness that I am ready to abandon it. But don't try to deceive, because that means deep down you know I am not going to abandon it. I am just talking about it because it is not really needed to be abandoned. You cannot deceive on that point. If you are willing to abandon it, then suddenly all dualities in life will disappear. Then silence and noise both will look exactly the same. Neither silence has any appeal to you, nor noise has any disturbance. Then life and death are the same to you. neither life makes you cling to it, nor death makes you run away from it. You won't have to ask anyone else, and naturally you won't accept the confusing talk of false teachers. During your daily activities, 24 hours a day, you should not hold to birth and death and the Buddha path as existent, nor should you deny them as non-existent. What he is saying is that all these categories of existence or non-existence, life and death, misery and happiness, all these categories belong to the mind. And a person who is ready to abandon life is naturally ready to abandon mind, because mind is only a small part of your life. It is not all of it. Once you are ready to take the jump, the jump is no more needed. Only your readiness is needed. But your readiness should be total. And in that readiness, you can live your ordinary life, doing whatever you have always been doing. Your doing and non-doing will not be any more opposed. Your speaking and your being silent will not be opposed. The world and renouncing it will not be opposed. Wherever you are, whatever you are doing, you will do it without any disturbance and without any clinging. Absolutely balanced. The word Buddha uses it for this experience is sammasati, right remembrance. Just you are full of a remembrance of your own eternal being. The moment you renounced dualities, you have entered the path of the eternal. You have become an immortal. Just contemplate this. A monk asked Chao, does a dog have Buddha nature or not? Chao said, yes. Why contemplate this? Because if a dog has Buddha nature, obviously, you also have it. And if a dog one day is going to become a Buddha, then your destination is also not far away. There are many implications in it. If a dog has a Buddha nature, then you have it. Then your enemy have it. Then all living beings have it. So there is no question of superiority or inferiority. It is only a question when one decides to wake up. It is up to you whether you want to have a little more sleep, then take a turn and pull the blanket over. But even while you are asleep inside the blanket, enjoying a beautiful morning, you are a Buddha. It is up to you. Buddha has decided to sit under a tree. You have decided to lie down under a bed. But there is no essential difference. A Buddha can become enlightened under a tree, you can become enlightened under a blanket. And it will be really better, because you will be opening a new possibility for the future humanity. Otherwise, people always think that you have to sit under a tree. And particularly in cold winter, in rainy season, and all kinds of trouble. So they go on postponing Buddha nature. I say to you that there is no problem. You can be perfectly cozy under your blanket and become Buddha there. There is no problem, because becoming a Buddha has nothing to do with sitting under a tree. It is not a prerequisite, nor you have to sit in a lotus posture. Because what Buddhahood has to do with a lotus posture? And if lotus posture is essential, then dogs cannot become impossible. How can you manage a dog to sit in a lotus posture? Of course, under a blanket it is possible. And I think most of you will prefer under a blanket. That was just coincidental that poor Gautama Buddha was sitting under a tree. He has no idea that the same can happen under a blanket. In fact, the same question was asked to him by his wife, when after 12 years he came back to the palace. he knew that his father will be very angry. He was the only son, and born when the father was very old. And all his hopes were dependent on him. He was waiting just for him to be ready to take the charge of the whole kingdom. The old man was tired and he wanted to retire. And just before that, Gautama Buddha escaped from the palace. Just one day before, a child was born to Gautama Buddha's wife. It is such a human story, so beautiful, that before leaving the palace, Gautama Buddha thought, just to see at least once the face of the child, his child. The symbol of his love and his wife. So he went into the chamber of his wife. She was asleep. And the child was covered under a blanket. He wanted to remove the blanket and to see the face of the child, because perhaps he will never come again. He is going on an unknown pilgrimage. Nothing can be said what will happen to his life. He is risking everything, his kingdom, his wife, his child, himself, in search of something which he has heard only, that it is possible that it has happened before to few people who have looked for it, the enlightenment. But he was as full of doubts as any one of you. But the moment of decision has come, because he has seen death. And he has seen old age, and he has seen sickness, and he has also seen a sannyasin, just that very day, for the first time. And it has become an absolute question to him that if there is death, then just wasting time in the palace is dangerous. Before death comes, I have to find out something that is beyond death. So he was determined to leave, but the human mind, human nature, he just wanted to see the face. He has not even seen the face of his own child. But he was afraid that if he removes the blanket, Yasodhara, his wife, if she wakes up, and there is every possibility she will wake up, and she will ask, what you are doing in the middle of the night in my room? And you seem to be ready that you are going somewhere. The chariot was standing outside the gate. Everything was ready, he was just to leave. And he said to his charioteer, "Just wait a minute. Let me see the child's face. I may never come back again." But he could not see, because the fear, if Yasodhara wakes up, he starts crying, weeping, that where are you going, what are you doing, what is this renunciation, what is this enlightenment? And one never knows about a woman. She may wake up the whole palace, the old father will come up, and the whole thing will be spoiled. So he has simply escaped. After 12 years, when he was enlightened, the first thing he did was to come back to his palace to ask apology to his father, to his wife, to his son, who must be now 12 years of age. And he was aware that they will be angry. The father was very angry. He was the first to meet. And for half an hour he continued abusing him. But then suddenly he became aware that he is saying so many things. And his son is just standing there like a marble statue, as if nothing is affecting him. He looked at him, and Gautama Buddha said, "That's what I wanted. Please remove your tears. Look at me. I am not the same boy who has left the palace. Your son has died long time before. I look similar to your son, but my whole consciousness is different. You just look." The father said, "I am seeing it, because for half an hour I have been abusing you. That is enough proof that you have changed. Otherwise, I know how temperamental you were. You could not stand so silently. What has happened to you?" And Buddha said, "I will tell you. Just let me first see my wife and my child. They must be waiting. They must have heard that I have come." And his wife asked him the first thing. "That I can see that you are transformed. Although these 12 years it was a great suffering. Not that you have gone, I suffered because you did not tell me. If you had simply told me that you are going to seek the truth, do you think I would have prevented you? You have insulted me very badly. This is the wound that I have been carrying for 12 years. Not that you had gone in search of truth, that is something to rejoice in. Not that you have gone to become enlightened, I would not have prevented you. I also belong to the warriors. Do you think I am that weak, that I would have cried and screamed and stopped you? All these 12 years, my only suffering was that you did not trust me. I would have allowed you. I would have given you a send-off. I would have come up to the chariot. And the only question that has been up in my mind for all these 12 years, I want to ask first. And that is the question, whatever you have attained, it certainly seems you have attained something. You are no more the same person who has left this palace. You radiate a different light. Your presence is totally new and fresh. Your eyes are as pure and clear as a cloudless sky. You have become so beautiful. You were always beautiful, but this beauty seems to be not of this world. Some grace from the beyond has descended on you. My question is, whatever you have attained, was not it possible to attain it here in this palace? Can the palace prevent the truth? And it is a tremendously intelligent question. And Gautam Buddha has to accept that I could have attained it here, but I had no idea at that moment. Now I can say, I could have attained it here in this palace. There was no need to go to the mountains. There was no need to go anywhere. I had to go inside. And that could have happened anywhere. This palace was as good as any other place. But now I can say, at that moment I had no idea, so you have to forgive me. And you have to forgive me because it is not that I had not trusted you or your courage. In fact, I was doubtful of myself. That if I see you wake up and I see the child, I may myself start feeling that what I am doing, leaving my beautiful wife, whose total love, whose total devotion is for me, and leaving my 1-day-year-old child, if I was to leave him, then why I gave birth to him? I am escaping from my responsibilities, and if my old father has awakened, it would have become impossible for me. It was not that I did not trust you, it was really I did not trust myself. I knew that there was a wavering. I was not total in renouncing. A part of me was saying, what are you doing? And a part of me was saying that this is the time to do it. If you don't do it this time, it will become more and more difficult. Your father is preparing for crowning you. Once you are crowned as a king, it will be more difficult. And Yasodhara said to him that this is the only question that I wanted to ask, and I am immensely happy that you have been absolutely truthful in saying that it can be attained here, it can be attained anywhere. Now your son, who was just standing there, a little boy of 12 years old, he has been continuously asking about you. And I have been telling that just wait, he will come back. He cannot be so cruel. He cannot be so unkind. He cannot be so inhuman. One day he will come. Perhaps whatever he has gone to realize is taking time. Once he has realized it, the first thing is that he will come back. So your son is here, and I want you that what heritage you are leaving for the son, what have you got to give to him? You have given him life. Now what else? And Buddha has nothing except his begging bow. So he called his son, whose name was Rahul. And I will tell you why his name was Rahul. It was Gautam Buddha's own given name. He called Rahul close to him and gave him the begging bowl, and he said, I don't have anything. This is my whole possession. From now onwards, I will have to use my hands as a begging bowl to take my food, to beg my food. And by giving this begging bowl, I am initiating you into sannyas. Because that is the only treasure that I have found, and I would like you to find it too. And he asked Yasodhara, that you have to be ready to become a part of my commune of sannyasins. And he initiated his wife, and the old man has come and was watching the whole scene. And he said to Gautam Buddha, then why you are leaving me? Don't you want to share what you have found with your old father? And my death is very close. Initiate me also. And Buddha said, I had come in fact just to take you all with me. Because what I have found is a far greater kingdom, a kingdom that is going to last forever, which cannot be conquered. I had come here so that you can feel my presence, so that you can feel my realization, and I can persuade you to become my fellow travelers. He initiated all the three persons. The name of Rahul was given because in Indian mythology, when there is a moon eclipse, the Indian mythology says that there are two enemies of moon. In the mythology, moon is a person, a god, and he has two enemies. One is Rahu, and the other is Ketu. When the moon eclipse happens, it happens because Rahu and Ketu catch hold of the moon. They try to kill it, but each time moon escapes from their grip. And Gautam Buddha has given the name Rahul to his son because he thought that now this son of mine is going to be my greatest hindrance. He is going to be my greatest enemy. He will prevent me from going to the Himalayas. Love for him, attachment for him, is going to be my chains. That's why he has given him the name Rahul. They all moved into the forest outside the city where all his sannyasins were staying. And he told in the first sermon that evening to the sannyasins that my wife Yasodhara has asked me a question which is of tremendous importance. She has asked me, was it not possible to become enlightened in the palace as a king? And I have told her the truth, that there is no question of any place, any time. One can become enlightened anywhere. But at that time, nobody was there to say it to me. I had no idea of it. Where it has to be found, whom I have to ask, where I have to go, Just in the unknown I jumped. But now I can say that wherever you are, if you are courageous, to risk everything for being alert and aware, the enlightenment is going to happen. Hence I say, Master Chao could not have said no. That is not the answer of a man of enlightenment. The answer can only be yes. Even if Master Chao has to say himself to me that I had said no, I will refuse it. I will not listen even to Gautam Buddha. Because the no goes against his whole philosophy. His whole philosophy is a tremendous reverence for all life. Hence, every living being in every situation has the capacity to blossom into enlightenment. And this should be a great encouragement to you, that it is not only for some special people to become enlightened. Even a dog has a Buddha nature. All the religions have been doing just the opposite. They have been condemning you that you are born in sin, that you cannot redeem yourself unless a redeemer is sent by God. You are going to live in misery and sin and suffering. Buddha gives man absolute dignity, freedom, as nobody else before him has ever done. He drops the idea of God just to raise your dignity and your freedom to its ultimate height. He removes God to make you God. There has never been another human being in love with other human beings as Gautam Buddha has loved them. And not only human beings, but all living beings. His love is infinite. So when I make any correction, I am absolutely certain that my correction is going to be approved by anyone who is enlightened. And I am not going to make any compromise. It may be Master Chao, it may be Tahui, it may be Gautam Buddha. I am not going to make any compromise because my own innermost experience says yes. then I don't bother about anybody. Any history, any scripture. I was speaking in a Buddhist conference in Bodh Gaya. And one of the most learned Buddhist monk in India is Bhadant Anand Kausalyan. He was the president of the conference. And when I had spoken, he came to my camp. And he told me that I have heard you few times before, once in Nagpur, once in Wardha, and this was the third time. And you are a strange man. You go on saying things which Buddha has not said. And I have devoted my whole life, and he was an old man, near about 70 at that time. If he is alive, he must be near about 100. That Buddha has not said it, that you go on telling stories which I have never found in any scripture. And the trouble is that your story seems to be so right and to the point that it feels that perhaps the people who were collecting the scriptures have forgotten to write it. It fits. I cannot deny it. I cannot say that it goes against the essences of the scripture, but it is not there. So my problem is, he said, I cannot deny the truth of your story, but I cannot support its historicity. Do you have any suggestion? I told him there is no problem. Whenever I say a story about Gautam Buddha, if it is not in the scripture, put it in your scripture. It should be there. If I say something that Gautam Buddha has said and you don't find it anywhere, manage to put in the right place where it should have been and is missing. Because whatever I am saying, I am not a historian and I am not a scholar. But I am speaking from the same space as Gautam Buddha was speaking. So you can accept my word as the authority without any trouble. He said, my God, even if I do it, no other scholar is going to accept it. After 25 centuries, a certain scripture has been accepted, and you want me to add something into it, they will kill me. I said, it is better to be killed. It is worth, if you can make the scripture a little more beautiful, a little more truthful, a little more authentic. If you say what I am saying is not true, then I am ready to argue for it. He said, no, that I am not saying. But please forgive me, I cannot make changes in the scriptures because that is not allowed by any religion. I said, this is the trouble, that all religions become prisons. Every religion should remain a flowing stream. New rivers should be allowed to meet. Why make your religions like dead, stale ponds? Let it be a river, and continuous new streams go on meeting into it. New people will be becoming enlightened, and fresher insights they will bring, and the river will become broader and broader and bigger and more valuable. But this has not happened yet. People are too much past-oriented and too much afraid of changing anything. And the reason is that they don't have the experience about which they are talking. I asked Bhadant Anand that, do you have the enlightenment that Gautam Buddha had? If you don't have it, then just listen what I am saying. I have it. Ta Hui is suffering from his past faults, and he was afraid to say yes, because that means saying Buddha nature and the nature of Tao are just the same. It is because of his own guilt he cannot say the truth. But I don't have any guilt. I don't have any past, in fact. Whatever I am saying is exactly the response in this moment. And I don't feel even a single part of me reluctant. I'm saying it with my whole being. That makes my statements totally of a different category. They are not intellectual. They are not historical. They are not scriptural. They are existential. I'm saying from the same space, from where Buddha has spoken, from where Chao has spoken, from where one day Tahui is going to speak.